And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, things are up in the air really now with regard to control of the Congress, both the sitting Congress and the one that's going to come. So many Republicans are resigning, and not resigning 2 or 3 or 4 months out, resigning and leaving immediately. What are they down to? A two-vote, a three-vote majority?
It's down to 217 Republican, 213 Democrat. And that is, I think, unique because in a majority of the House is 218. There's 435 seats in the House. And so neither party has a majority. The Republicans still have a four-vote advantage there. So, but it's kind of incredible that these folks are leaving. And, of course, the atmosphere hasn't gotten any better. It's
the latest to leave is Mike Gallagher. Do you know why he's leaving? And why he's leaving so quickly? He didn't say.
No. Well, he's up there in Wisconsin. They've just had a redistricting up in Wisconsin that might be might affect him.
But that doesn't affect him now. Even if he had gotten himself a district he couldn't win in, he's still there till the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. He's
leaving this week.
Yeah, he wasn't considered one of the firebrands either.
No, he's the guy that is the. They're all, both Democrats and Republicans are applauding him because he's so anti-Chinese. He's leading I don't know, they got a funny name for the committee, but it's some committee that investigates
China.
Yeah, China, and how to mount effectively a Cold War against China and how to isolate it economically. Which seems to be the program of both the Republicans and the Democrats. I don't quite understand why it is that program, but that's what it is. What I do understand is they're not going to succeed. And they're going to cause a lot of trouble in the world as part of not succeeding. But anyway, he's in charge of that. Now he quits. I don't get it.
Well, I'm just wondering... on these ones that are leaving, whether he has another job lined up that pays him more or whatever, certainly probably be less headaches than what they're going through in the Congress right now.
Well, that's interesting because that brings up Dave McCormick.
Okay.
Dave McCormick is your guy, right? He's running for Senate in Pennsylvania.
He's not my guy, but he's the guy we're watching.
We're watching him, right. So he lost to Oz the last time he tried. Now nobody's running against him really on the Republican side. I think that woman who's running in the primary, I don't know if she is running or she's not running. I can't figure out where she stands with her signatures. But in any case, he's got everybody's support, right?
In the party.
In the Republican Party, right. Everybody's support. So he was George Bush's... Deputy Treasury Secretary for International Affairs. And his specific job was negotiating, opening to China, getting the Chinese to agree to accept more U.S. investment. He worked under Henry Paulson. Paulson said that he operated as if he were the cabinet minister, and Paulson said then that was a good thing. He had to do that. So here's a guy who wrote the policy, because that's what cabinet ministers do. They write the policy.
We should specify that's the Secretary of the Treasury.
Secretary of the Treasury, right. And the policy was that the Chinese agreed to allow hedge funds, insurance companies, and banks, American, to set up operations in China, buy Chinese companies, have at the beginning a minority stake, but in the end they could even have a majority stake in the company. But more significantly, for the banks, American banks could bankroll American investors who wanted to set up factories in China. They needed financing. If they were, you know, not easy working with Chinese banks, language difficulties or whatever, well, they could go to Citibank, or they could go to Bank of America, or one of the other giant American banks who now could lend into China and could take their money out of China. China's allowed them to do that. So that's what McCormick did. And guess what? There was a lot of investment that went into China. And at one point, the Chinese said, well, wait a minute, you can't invest more than $1 billion here. And he managed to get them to increase the limits to $30 billion. Then the Bush administration came to an end. He left the administration, and he became the CEO of the largest hedge fund in the world, which is headquartered in Connecticut, Bridgewater. And immediately, Bridgewater became the largest American investor, hedge fund investor, in China with a $1 billion investment. And they did very well, made a fortune on those investments. McCormick is now attacking Casey for getting it all wrong on China, because according to McCormick, Casey wants to invest in China. Is that hypocrisy, or have I not read this thing right?
Well, under the normal terms of the dictionary, yes, it's hypocrisy. But under the terms of politics, particularly the way the Republicans play politics, that's just the game plan. Projection to define your opponent before they can define you, and to do so in a manner that will take the focus off of you and put it on the opponent.
But will Casey let him get away with it?
We'll have to see. I'm going to be seeing Senator Casey this coming week. I may get to ask him something like that.
I think that this situation where the Republicans just say whatever they want. I mean, Trump, of course, is the master at this, master in terms of constantly doing it. He doesn't get away with it. But they just say whatever they want. They make up whatever facts are convenient to make up. Like Conway said years when Trump first came into office, they deal with alternative facts, right? They have alternative facts. So here's Dan Muser, not your congressman, my congressman. He's busy attacking the Biden administration. One of his big points, he has 5 points. I won't bother you with all of them. But one of the 5 points is Biden is killing the oil and gas industry. Meanwhile, the American oil and gas industry is producing more oil and gas than ever before, and they're exporting more oil and gas than ever before, and the country is completely self-sufficient in oil and gas. How is he killing the oil and gas industry?
Well, you know, I've been wondering about why I'm seeing all these commercials on television talking about getting rid of that the Biden will and California will get rid of gas cars for electric vehicles, and now it's starting to make sense. This is their pitch. This is what they're talking about, and of course, the Biden administration came out this last week about talking about having, what is it, 50% of the vehicles by 2030-something, 32 or 35, not being gas-powered.
Right, they'd be electric-powered, or they'd be hybrid.
Yeah, or hybrids.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, by the way, if that were the case, the amount of carbon dioxide that would be removed from the atmosphere because of not burning car gas would be equivalent to an entire year's worth of pollution that spews into the atmosphere from the United States. Just cutting it from cars, from 50% of the cars. Of course, cars are what are the biggest single contributor to air pollution.
You know, it reminds me when I was out in living out in California, they put a moratorium on like outdoor barbecue type of stuff that involved gas-powered grills and stuff, and it was amazing how much less pollution wound up in the atmosphere.
Yeah,
when you've got a lot of people doing it. The counter problem to that they're going to talk about is that it causes more pollution to do the mining and the production of batteries and electric vehicles. And, we're going to hear more and more about that debate. Of course, it's always the fossil fuel guys that are behind it, all of these scare tactics.
It may cause pollution to do lithium mining, but you have to work it out. You have to see which, how much, and how much out of the production of and burning of the oil derivatives.
Yeah, and meanwhile,
it's not that hard to figure out.
Right. Meanwhile, electric vehicle purchases seem to have slowed down in the United States, except maybe in California. Whether this is going to be a permanent trend or not, I know it's affected the Tesla stock, for instance. And one of the reasons, of course, is that the price of these vehicles is so high that it lower and middle income people have a problem affording it. And, although the Biden industry with administration, what they've been trying to do is build out more charging stations for electric vehicles.
But that wouldn't reduce the cost of the car, the upfront cost.
No.
But it is true. If there's no charging stations, there's no point in buying the car.
Yeah. That's the other thing, is the convenience thing. And they found out that it's not a panacea, particularly in California, which is a warmer climate is one thing. But in the winter time, they find out that electric vehicles use up the battery far more quickly, and the cold is bad for batteries. So they're still working out a lot of the details on those things.
But it is true that the American car industry is not equipped to produce a large number of cheap electric cars.
Right.
But the Chinese car industry is.
Yes.
The Chinese car industry turns out a car that is a small equivalent to a small Tesla and can sell it profitably in London for $11,000. Now, that's a game changer, right?
Yeah. Isn't that the idea that what Trump was saying, he was going to put 100% tariff on Chinese cars made in Mexico?
That's what he said. On any Chinese car. That's right.
Right.
But isn't the whole point of capitalism that competition is good for the consumer because it brings down prices?
Well,
you seems know, to me he's got
Trump
it wrong.
The,
he's got it all wrong.
The Trump voter never understood tariffs.
Yeah.
He's selling it as he's taking money from the Chinese and putting it into our treasury, when in fact he's taking it from the American consumer.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's what tariffs do.
Yeah, it's a tax.
Yeah.
And a tax is paid by the consumer. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
The government of Singapore for many years pursued an economic policy, which is very interesting. Their policy was they kept wages low, and they had an enormous trade with China, and the Chinese goods were very cheap, so workers could live a fairly good life on very low wages, which meant that capitalists could invest, they could also invade Singapore, and very profitably produce there because they were paying low wages. And yet, because of the fact that they relied on the exploitation of the Chinese workers in China and were getting, cheap goods out of China, everybody was happy, except maybe the workers in China, but nobody asked them. So here you have a situation where the Chinese government is perfectly willing to sacrifice the workers in China and keep their wages low. But it doesn't seem to work for people who don't understand how capitalism works, like Trump.
Well, authoritarian regimes are always willing to sacrifice the masses in order to keep themselves in power.
Right.
That's one of the things. Of course, none of this will come to fruition if the Republicans are not in charge, and we had a couple of things this week about the U.S. Senate races. You mentioned Dave McCormick in Pennsylvania. The latest poll still has Bob Casey up, but not quite as much as it was before. Before he had about a double-digit lead on that. But we saw what happened in Ohio this week, where the MAGA candidate, Marino, won the primary against two other people, and not, one of whom was backed by the governor. And he not only won it, but he got more than 50% of the vote.
Of the primary vote?
Of the primary vote. Yeah, the primary vote. So that's going to be a...
But that was a case where the Democrats were advertising in his behalf.
Yes. That's
a very dangerous tactic, but they've adopted that tactic.
Yeah, and it's worked in the past. It worked on...
Well, it worked here, too.
Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget Josh Shapiro was working for Mastriano to win the primary.
Right.
That
but
kind of
the
thing.
Question but Ohio, is this guy in Ohio as weak a candidate as Mastriano was in Pennsylvania?
No. The electorate is different in Ohio.
Yeah.
And we'll have to see, but it's the only chance that the Democrats have. So that's one. And they have trouble in Maryland, which should be a reliably Democratic state. Except for the fact that the very popular ex-governor, Larry Hogan, changed his mind and decided that he was going to run for the Senate. And the polling I saw this week has him significantly ahead of the two lesser-known Democrats who are running in a primary. And not only is he ahead, but he's above 50%, which, you know, is my marker. If he stays there, it doesn't matter how close they get, they can't win. And it's going to be, you know, the people have a good impression of Larry Hogan in Maryland.
Well, I think here's a case where the Democrats don't run against Larry Hogan. They got to run against Republicans.
Yes.
They got to make, forget Hogan, run against Trump.
Well, run against the Republican programs.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things, you know, that the when the Republicans in charge, they don't want you to have lower medical costs. When the Republicans in charge now, we have a pretty good bunch of sound bites about Social Security. And those things are, hey, I agree with you. I think Larry Hogan's a nice guy, but he's going to give the Republicans an opportunity to take away all these things.
Yeah, he's going to.
You're not going to get abortion rights.
That's right.
Back. All of this stuff. So I think that that's where those races should be going.
I think people have to forget about the quoting that old saw out of Massachusetts, all politics is local. All politics is national. That's what it is. Your local guy doesn't matter. If he's a Republican or she's a Republican, they're voting whatever the Republican Party, meaning Trump, tells them to do. If not, they'll get chucked out of the party.
As of now, I think, yeah, that's right. But it's still, I think it's local to the extent that the candidate does matter. If you've got a really bad candidate, a local candidate, then you can exploit that on a local level. But on policy-wise, it is national. And, you know, before the show, we were talking about this book by Rachel Bitecofer, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, and we're talking about some of her theories here as to how to frame and win elections. So that's going to be interesting. You know, one of the things Republicans didn't seem to care about was whether the government was running or being shut down. And this week we had that vote at the last minute.
Friday night they voted. In fact, they voted it after the government funding period ended.
Right.
But, all right, what's a couple of hours among friends?
But they voted to keep it open.
Right.
And it is very interesting because the Speaker of the House was confronted with the firebrands in his caucus who didn't want to fund the government and particular things in it. And he put it up for a vote anyway, and he violated the Hastert rule, which was that they would not vote on anything unless they had a majority of their majority. And they did not have a majority of their majority. as I said, they have 217 or 218 votes right now. It's going down to 217, and they only got, 100?
100 votes.
100 of their own, and they had to rely on the Democrats, which...
And tell me, what is the point of the hostage rule?
Party discipline.
Exactly. Party discipline, to nationalize the party. That's the point of the hostage rule.
Yeah. And immediately this triggered Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's, she's not interested in governing. She's just interesting in the show. And she now put forth indication that she now wants to have a vote on removing the speaker.
Well, she filed a motion.
She filed the motion. Now, she said she's not going to call for it to be voted on immediately. It's just a warning shot, but it's going to be interesting. If she does press it, what happens? What do the Democrats do? What do they have? 8 votes last time or 5 votes last time to remove the speaker?
Yeah. A lot of votes.
Well, the Republicans.
Yeah, the Republicans.
You
know, right.
If you get 5 Republicans and all the Democrats, the speaker is gone. And I'm not so sure that the Democrats don't want to remove him again. You know, they went, it's sort of like, the Odyssey. You go from Scylla to Charybdis, from bad to worse on here. Michael Johnson is really a pretty bad speaker. He's got bad ideas, his religious extremism and things like that. The only question is, who else would they get?
You know, that's the thing. They've already rejected everybody in front of them.
Well, it's Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan. I'm sure Jordan would run again. Trump would probably want to back Jordan.
But he couldn't win last time. Why would he win this time?
Just frustration. He'd say, look, you turned me down and look what you got. I'm the real deal. I'm the real bomb thrower, so to speak. And we'll see. On that, you know, they're failing in other things. They failed this week on the committee to investigate the president for impeachment.
I don't know if you saw the some snippets out of the hearing of that committee, but Jared Moskowitz, a Democratic member of the committee, was baiting Jordan, and he said to Jordan, why don't you impeach him already? What do you keep having all these meetings for? They're all useless. You don't produce any evidence. Vote. Call the vote. You know what? I'll move it. You second it. Then we can have the vote. Let's impeach him. So he did. He moved it. And he says to Jordan, will you second it? And Jordan just stared at him. Nobody seconded it.
Comer.
Comer was there. He was looking on. Right. It's because... Yeah. But it's a show. They have nothing, and they have nothing to show. They pinned all their hopes on made up evidence, and the guy who made up the evidence got arrested for making up the evidence.
But but a lot of their voters just are going to see the show.
Yeah,
they're not going to see the results.
Yeah,
and that's what they care about. This is performance art that these guys go through, and Marjorie Taylor Greene has perfected that art. They used to, they got rid of George Santos, who had also perfected the art.
He's resigned from the Republican Party. Did you see that they lost him, George Santos?
Yes.
Oh. Santos resigned from the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well.
He says they're not COVID enough. They're not MAGA enough.
Well, Senator Menendez said he would not run as a Democrat again.
Can he run?
As an independent?
In life, can he run? Will he be able to raise the money? Jersey's an expensive state.
Well, who knows if he has any gold bars hidden
somewhere.
Who knows,
right, exactly.
But he would take votes off of any Democrats. So
you think so?
It takes some, yeah. Because some people would just recognize the name. Speaking of name recognition, weren't we supposed to get... Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s vice presidential nominee this week.
Well, we didn't get it.
We're talking about the Shanahan woman who is the her qualification seems to be that she was once married to a tech billionaire. We'll have to see. Meanwhile, no labels can't get a candidate.
Right.
Nobody wants to, nobody wants to be labeled with no label.
With no label, right.
They've had everybody reject them. They try to get the former, Jeff Duncan, the former lieutenant governor of Georgia. Yeah, really. I mean, they're reaching for things. But, you know.
I think that I am the proper candidate to be the vice presidential nominee for Bob Kennedy Jr.
Okay.
I know nobody. I'm married to nobody significant. I've achieved nothing. I'm very ignorant. I'm perfect.
Well, I disagree. I think you're married to someone significant. But
to me. To me.
Yeah.
But
to our friends, yes. Yeah. But other than that. But, I did want to get back. We started talking about billionaire Dave McCormick. We should maybe end with billionaire Jeffrey Az.
Jeffrey Az may have made a big windfall this week.
Well, he may have. He was a dabbler in Republican politics over the last several cycles. His main thing being charter schools, wants to get rid of public schools, but he's become more and more of a libertarian. He had been giving money to other candidates other than Donald Trump in the Republican primaries, and they all fell by the wayside, which shows that his political acumen wasn't all that great, as many of these people are. They just have the money. And so now he had a little meeting with Donald Trump about TikTok because his company is a big investor in the company that owns TikTok. And lo and behold, Donald Trump changed his mind instead of saying we should get rid of it, saying, no, we shouldn't. And suddenly Yaz's name popped up along with, lo and behold, Henry Paulson's name as a potential Secretary of the Treasury. But now there's even a closer tie because apparently Jeffrey Az's company is the biggest investor in the SPAC, the Special Purpose Acquisition Company, which is the shell through which Donald Trump is going to bring Truth Social.
Did bring. It got voted on this at the end of the week.
To market. So yeah. He stands to make a lot of money on that or maybe lose a lot of money on that. But he's more and more of his money is going into politics.
And don't forget, Jeffrey Az is the guy who brought you no public schools. He is against public education. That's his whole thing.
Yeah. Yes. We'll see how much money then he wants to pump into Pennsylvania on other races. If he keeps busy on certain things, he won't be able to fund Pennsylvania things. Of course, the RNC can't fund anything in the states now because Donald Trump has made it his own little piggy bank.
Right.
He's going to funnel all their donations through to his campaign and to his lawyers.
Right.
So.
Well, all right. There you go. Now, maybe some of that money is going to get funneled to the people of the state of New York because he may have to come up with $500 million to pay those penalties. We'll see.
He's going to want to get all his supporters to come up with the $500 million, not himself.
Exactly. All right.
That's it for this week. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, and we'd be glad to hear what you and Casey talk about when you have your confab.
We'll let you know how it goes.
All right. Bye now. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.